Welcome to the NatureVac podcast, where we are talking about climate change and the green economy. My name is Tarmo Virki, and today I'm speaking with Sam Kamani, host of Web3 podcast and VP of Growth at Cookbook, a Web3 tools maker.
Good morning, Sam. Welcome to the NatureVac.
Good morning, Tarmo. It's great to be here. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Tell us in a few words, what do you do? What's your background?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to share with you my background. Grew up in India, studied computer science, as you do, but quickly realized that I'm a natural extrovert. I love talking with people, hence I'm here right now and meeting people. So then I went into marketing, came to New Zealand to study marketing, and then started an e-commerce company because I loved learning about how to reach people, how to sell to people, and so on and so forth. Grew it to a seven-figure business, exited that, then worked in esports in San Francisco as COO of an esports company. And that got acquired in 2018. After that, I wrote books on tech startup, like the 30-day startup. Tens of thousands of people bought that on Amazon. And I ran a podcast. Where I used to interview startup founders as well as VCs, investors, angels. But about a year and a half ago, I realized that, you know, I have known about blockchain. I have built MVPs and just dipped my toes in that space for a while. But a year and a half ago, I realized that, look, this space is drastically changing how humans interact with each other and what's happening, and just how decentralization is changing the nature of things. So I really need to go into this. Also, most of my friends from those who are working for Google, for Amazon, for LinkedIn, they were leaving their jobs in really high-paid tech jobs and leaving their stake just to start their own Web3 startup. That's when I realized, you know, this is for real. There's so many smart people coming into this space. So many new projects are going to be built, and so much value is going to be created. So that's when I left everything. I closed down my other podcast, started a podcast on Web3. It's called Web3 with Sam Kamani, and started advising startups in this space. And one of the startups that I was advising is cookbook.dev. That's the startup that I joined about 6 months ago, or just before it launched, as one of the founding members. So there were three co-founders, and I was the next person that joined that team. What we do is we have a library or like a collection of smart contracts that people can source. So say someone wants to create their own token, or like a voting DAO, like a decentralized autonomous organization, or any type of NFT, they can source a template and just copy from that and deploy it in a few seconds instead of spending weeks. So just like, you know, Canva, the software where you can design from templates. So the same thing we have done for smart contracts. We have broken down the time it would take for someone to develop from scratch or start from nowhere. So start from zero. So that's the platform we built. It's called cookbook.dev. And we are just in the middle of, just as I was sharing with you earlier, middle of our pre-seed round. It got oversubscribed, so we'll close it within a week or so. But it's been a super exciting journey. So here I'm. Ask me anything about, if you want, about blockchain, yeah. Web3 and all this.
Yeah, basically connecting the kind of your software background and marketing, then Web3 is kind of natural combination, right?
Yes, absolutely. Because Web3 is so much community based, and the other things that I have seen with Web3 is that by its own nature, it is permissionless, so anyone can build on it. It is very open source friendly. And this is just the nature of blockchain. It is not a bug. It is the part of the design that anyone can look at the data on the blockchain, because these are public blockchains, and build on top of it. You don't have to wait for the company to give you an API access before you start building on those APIs. So I naturally gravitated towards this space. And that's here I am.
It sounds natural for you. The... I mean, many people say that Web3 is basically a marketing spin. What is Web3 for you?
The thing is that Web3 is more of a general concept, such as like internet or mobile technology or cloud computing, which is made up lots of different technologies. Just like AWS has over 4,000 different services that you can access on AWS. So, and they all live on the cloud. So it's all just cloud computing. So because when it's a general subject like this, it is quite hard to define it. And Web3 is particularly hard to define. Just like previously, they used to define it as Web1 is just static websites, read and write, which was the website internet of 1990. Then came the mid-2000s, where it was social media networks like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all these came around, and it became read, write, as well as share. And then they say that Web3 is read, write, share, as well as own. So you own in form of tokens and things like that when you interact with the platform itself. And then those tokens give you governance rights and how that platform is being run. So if you do not like something, you can vote for it. Just like as I think I was sharing with you earlier, that we have won tens of thousands of dollars in grants from organizations such as ENS or Binance or Nouns DAO. DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. And every time, the reason we won is because the community voted for us. So because the community holds their own tokens, and then they said that, hey, we like this project. And there's not only us, there were more projects that won as well. So they chose maybe the top 6 projects to give out a funding grant to help those projects continue to build public goods. So these sort of things are now possible in Web3, which weren't that possible. So I do feel like Web3 is a lot more democratic, but it is still extremely hard to define, because people used to just call it crypto, or people used to just call it blockchain or different names. So it's just a different name. As long for me, the name doesn't really matter. What does matter is that, does it give you the ability to do what you want to do and get value out of it? So that's, yeah.
Yeah. And in a way, all these kind of the big headline names for something are kind of branding exercise, yes, anyway, just like the Web 2 or Web 1 were. I have to say, I was last weekend, I actually found myself on a website of Web 1, or maybe it was Web 0.5. It was built in 2001. It was like, wow, this kind of stuff is still on the internet.
Really, it's very interesting. So there is something called the Wayback Machine or something like that. And you can go on and then go and search the archives and see how the same company's website looked back in the day. So you can see how Amazon looked in early 2000s or Google looked in 2002 or something like that.
But the connection point of Web3, DAO, crypto, yes, it's a lot of different terms, and there is some overlap, some linking of those.
Yes,
we either had just or will have shortly an episode dedicated on DAOs fully.
Yes,
what's your take on DAO? Is it changing the world? Is it I don't know, the future of central governments, or what?
No, because the thing is, we are still in very, very early days. Most people in the world have not interacted with a DAO. Ask anyone, you know, go to your local supermarket and ask that checkout teller, hey, which DAO do you belong to, and which DAO do you contribute in governance of it and stuff. No, people don't have that that time and mental energy. So the main purpose of DAO is like the governance side of things, and the ability for people to vote in some cases anonymously, in some cases not anonymously, but their wallet address you can check who's voted. How I would consider the DAOs would work in future is that, you know, you have a company, you have 5 people in the company, or 20 or 50 people, and then you create a DAO out of it, and then every time your company makes profit, maybe 20% of the profit goes into the DAO and everyone gets an equal amount from that, what's in the DAO, basically. So that's one way of DAO to work and profit sharing between employees. I mean, this is just all theoretical concepts. You can do how you want to, or you could structure it in the way you want to. You could have it give everyone some sort of voting rights or governance rights that who will be the CEO of the company. Everyone will vote. Everyone has one vote, 50 employees in the company. Whichever person gets the most votes wins that CEO's position in a way.
But to me, this sounds like a classical democracy. Classical democratic yes. country could be run as a DAO.
It could be theoretically, but let me tell you, it has shortcomings just like any democracy has.
Oh, so really?
Yeah. I'm sure you know.
If we've seen a few clowns, yes.
Yeah, yes. So let me share with you one practical thing that I have seen that happens in this. There are lots of solutions as well, but one thing that does happen often more and more is that we are all running experiments. Everything is an experiment in this world because it's all so new. As I was sharing with you, most people, like, I cannot ask my mom that, hey, are you part of a DAO? No, she does not know what MetaMask is, what a digital wallet is. She has no idea. She can barely log into Facebook, you know? So the thing, what happens is that there are... how it all started was that, okay, I create a company, I create tokens in that. And then the more you interact with my company, I'll give you more tokens. So who interacts more? So it's like, okay, some people with more money are interacting more because they're maybe buying certain assets, they're selling more, they're trading more, whatever their cause. You know, if it's an art gallery, they created a DAO, then only the richest of the rich people could buy that physical art pieces. And then they gave... they had the biggest transaction volume, so then they were awarded the most governance tokens in that DAO. So a lot of the tokens were awarded based on transaction volumes and things like that. So then there are few people there which are called whales could own, like, you know, there's only 1 million tokens and 600,000 of them are with one person. So then the remaining 400,000 people who own one token each, their tokens are meaningless when the voting is, it's only one person deciding. So it is no better than complete autocracy, like, you know, like dictatorship.
Yeah, exactly.
So then people are trying. So then they're saying that, okay, we will make it weighted. So only one wallet, does not matter how many tokens you have in that wallet. One wallet is equal to one. But then there are products and you can have create multiple wallets and you can divide your tokens in that and you can gift it to multiple wallets that you own and you could do things like that. So then it again becomes more complex. So these are all things that we are still figuring out, like the whole industry is figuring out. Then once again, then there is another layer of this that, okay, we can do AML KYC, you know, anti-money laundering laws or know your customer, so that your passport or driver's license or whatever your identity is associated with your wallet address. But then that defeats the purpose of democracy. You know exactly which person voted for that. And then if you're a company of 20 people and then you know that only one person didn't vote for me, and then you know that, okay, he's the one I need to fire so next time I cannot be voted out. So it is challenges. Just like any democracy, there are challenges. I won't say that any DAO is perfect. So there are ways so that of doing that maybe the weighting is low. So okay, you got 600,000 votes. Instead of that, we'll count 5,000, you know, they'll be discounted or something, but you still have a larger voice because after all, you are the most valuable customer of the product. So you should have a bigger say. So there are ways that it will eventually figure out, and eventually the best solution will win. because that will create a more meritocratic environment that serves the company more or the organization it's more. So so there is still hope.
That's good that there is still hope. Talking about hope, I mean, looking out the window in Estonia, at least, the snow is down there. It's called winter. In the web-free world, I think it's called crypto winter. What's your take on it? Is it kind of, are we all going to die, or is there some hope in this world?
No, no, it's better. Crypto winter is better than nuclear winter. So I'm not too worried, not too worried at all, even though I work in this space. I have been in this. So in 2011, just to give you a bit of my history, I was trying to set up a miner for Bitcoin on my laptop, and and it was so complex, and it was like I couldn't figure it out, just trying it on my own without any prior knowledge. And I was going to LimeWire to download software to be able to do that. But even by that time, it had gotten quite significantly complex that you needed a good sort of a PC with graphics card, and even in 2011-12. So I never managed to do it or create anything, and I gave up, and I got virus from the software I was trying to download on LimeWire. So I was like, okay, this is too complex. No real person is ever going to use this technology. This is complete, you know, waste of my time. Gave up on that. And then again, after 2013-14, I tried again. And then the whole Mt. Gox thing happened and all those. I don't know if you even remember those sort of things. So Mt. Gox was a big exchange that crashed and burned kind of thing. And then again, the upswing happened later in the 2015, and then again downturn, crypto winter. Then 2017-18, it came back again with a roar, and that's when I was creating MVPs in the space and playing with CryptoKitties and stuff and all that. And in 2018, the downturn happened again, and then once again in 2020, the whole NFT 2020-2021, the whole NFT scene came into popularity, and the DAOs came in 2017-18. I remember it was the ICO boom and all that back then. So I've seen and I've lived through at least three or four of these upswings and downturns. Every time, the current downturn, the price is same or higher than the previous high of the previous cycle. So I've seen that. And there is one thing that is very different that has happened this time that has never happened before. And that is that in all previous downturns, the number of developers building in this space would reduce. This downturn, the number of developers building in this space went up. So that was very interesting that it has hit a critical mass, that number of people creating solutions in this has gone up significantly. So that was a very interesting thing that I found, that, okay, that now we will continue to get amazing solutions that we haven't seen before. Just like when the whole Bitcoin idea and everything, the whole blockchain was new 12 years ago, let's say like 2011, 12 or 10 or something, no one thought that billions of dollars of currency will be traded in exchange for digital art on blockchain on a public ledger. No one even thought of NFT. No one was thinking. The whole reason why Bitcoin was because of the, you know, people were burnt from the financial markets and the banks and stuff, and then banks not doing well, and then government going and rescuing them and with taxpayer money. And so some people weren't happy with all that sort of scenario. They weren't thinking of NFTs back then, but these solutions came, and now NFTs are used for access, whether it's access as tickets or access for freight or logistics or whatever, and it will continue to evolve over time, and that's what happens with any technology. It continues to evolve often over time. So yeah.
What do you see are the main reasons why the number of developers has continued to increase? Is it just the critical mass of this sector? Or, I mean, if I would be coming into the sector and seeing the headlines, I would be at least a little bit shocked.
So yes and no. But the thing is, what has happened is that people who are coming into this are always have been because they want to go into the line of sort of where it is more open and where things are a bit more decentralized and it is a bit more permissionless. And I have never experienced in my life working in software and all that things, how fast they're built in Web3, how dynamic they are, how fast things move, and how the average company size is so, so small. You know, it's all two or three developer companies, like two or three people companies, and they can create such big, massive, game-changing software in this space. So that is one attraction. And then the second is that during the last upswing or the boom market or whatever you, however you want to call it, crypto summer mainly the bull market, there was so much money that went in that a lot of the startups, they raise millions, like, you know, some raised 20 million, some raised 5, some raised 50, some raised 100. But there's thousands of startups who raised that amount of money and they were not stupid. They didn't just spend it. They didn't just burn it. They weren't gambling with that money and they spent it on developing software, developing good software that solves problems for people. And they are continuing to do that. So it might take 2 to 3 years before those solutions will be out. And so they are continuing to hire. They haven't just returned that money to their investors and gone home. Just like in the 2021 bull market, all the multi-billion dollar projects that you saw, just like OpenSea or Uniswap or any of those, they were built, they were started in the previous downturn, in the 2019 downturn. And so people have learned this and they have seen this, that, okay, this is the time to build. And people who are building now, they will create the next billion dollar startups or multi-billion dollar startups in the next 2 years or 3 years. So that's what's happening.
That's so cool to look forward to. So yes. What will, after Web3, what will be the Web4 kind of?
I have no idea. I have no idea at all. The thing that is the hottest right now is AI, which I'm sure you know of. Like, you know, everyone is talking
about it. In the headlines a little bit, yes.
Yes. So, you are very humble. You have a very good sense of humor, but yeah, pretty much it is the hype at the moment. And everyone, the thing is that it is nothing new. AI, I mean, like, when was the Turing test from, you know? People have been researching it for over 60 years, 70 years, and it has been. It's like OpenAI, when did OpenAI start? You know, everyone's talking about ChatGPT as if it is like yesterday, but it's not. It started, what, 6-7 years ago or 8 years ago, and it's still pretty much all the AI software that you are seeing, a version of that has been available in the last 2 or 3 years. It just has become mainstream overnight. Exactly. It is just like sometimes things happen slowly for ages. And when in media and stuff, you have seen that just because of the media and stuff, it has exploded, but it is nothing new. It will continue to evolve and go. I mean, and the thing is, all software will use a aspect of AI. So it's like we have a infrastructure project, like what we do. So you can create smart contracts on our platform. And then the documentation, because developers hate doing documentation and writing documentation. So the documentation is created by AI. So that's like, you know, one way to use it. And a lot of software will use AI in the back end to fulfill things.
Of course, it makes so much sense. The same logic or cycle thing happens with a metaverse buzz, and to me it looks very much like a Second Life of the 2020s.
yes, that's right. Yeah, metaverse is I would say it's interesting. And I talk with lots of interesting people in this space. I was talking with Vice President of Polygon the other day. And one of the things that he was saying in his view is that every time a new technological innovation is followed, or it comes after some new hardware innovation. So software innovation comes second, hardware innovation comes first. It's like, you know, you can't have Instagram if you have the brick phones, like, you know, the old school brick phones, Motorola and all those. So you can't have, because you need the camera system to be evolved enough. And then you need the 4G infrastructure and internet infrastructure to be evolved enough to transmit the images. Otherwise, you don't want to be connecting on a modem and waiting 5 minutes to see someone's picture of someone's breakfast. So yeah, every time it's like the hardware innovation comes first and then people build software on top of that. So with Metaverse, we don't still have a universal hardware that is accepted by humans. No one wants to wear those big glasses and be covered in and not see what other things are happening. So until we can make them like the glasses that you are wearing, which convert at a flick of a switch into Metaverse to back to regular, it's not going to happen. Just like, you know, Apple AirPods changed the game. It's like once the AirPods came, they are so widely accepted now. Mm-hmm. And if its own standalone company, it would be a very big, one of the major companies in itself from the revenue that Apple makes from AirPods. And I mean, there's other alternatives as well. Absolutely. But it is very big. And people listen to podcasts and stuff. Mm. In fact, someone might be listening to it right now on their AirPods.
Exactly.
Yes.
Just a quick comment on Instagram. I think if we would have had Instagram during the 2G era, I think it might have more content for the brains.
Like,
less of the example? Less for the less breakfast pictures, and maybe people would be kind of investing more in upload time of the pictures. Anyway, wrapping up, as this show is still called Nature Backed, even though it's a Web3 season, connecting the two, you've talked with a lot of people in the Web3 space. How much they are kind of conscious of the environment?
They are very conscious in a way. I'll tell you why, or why I have high hopes for this space to be highly environmentally efficient, because even commercially, environmental efficiency makes sense. So, you know, businesses, you say if you are running a business, you are always cost conscious. Because the goal of the business is not to lose money. otherwise you will have no business very, very fast. So that is the number one goal. So if you have two technologies available, one technology consumes 100 megawatts of power every single minute, and then the other technology, which consumes 0.1 of that in the same time with the same output, which one as a business would you invest in? So the answer is very clear, you know, because you have limited funds, you want to spend on staff, you want to spend on other things. So over time, the most efficient solution wins by itself. And that is what we have seen happen even currently with, as Ethereum moved from proof of work to proof of stake, it reduced its energy consumption by over 99%. And Ethereum is a layer one, and there are lots of layer twos which work and use the security of Ethereum and then work on top of that, which even reduce it further, the need for energy and power and stuff. So overnight, all crypto became like 96-97% more efficient. So there are still some larger things like Bitcoin, which work on proof of work. However, Bitcoin is not used for transaction. No one is transacting in Bitcoin. They are using it to hold value. So it is like, you know, no one is paying anyone in Bitcoin. What people used to pay these days, or they use, is a stable coin, because it doesn't have fluctuation. So they use stable coins to pay. And when they want to build things, which layer one network has the highest number of developers in the world, and it's Ethereum, and it's by miles ahead. And then it's all the EVM-based chains. So it would be Ethereum and Polygon and Binance and lots of them. They are based on that. So all the solutions are being created on these sort of technologies, which are getting more efficient by the minute. And in fact, it is reaching to a point where it is getting more efficient than the traditional financial ecosystem and stuff. Because this is sort of pure meritocracy and pure capitalism at its best. The problem happens is because capitalism is often tainted by monopolies and stuff. But in this, it is very hard when it is completely public to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point to wrap up. Thanks, Sam, for joining. And thanks to all the listeners who stayed with us for this interesting chat.
No, it was fantastic. It was. Thank you for this opportunity. It was great talking with you.
Welcome to Ringside with Ray and Prince. My name is Ray Leonard Jr.
No, that's just my dad.
My name is Prince Daniels Jr.
Daniels again with a big home.
On this show, we come to humanize
athletes, entertainers, business executives. We're going to see what makes them tick.
Tuesdays, 10 a.m. Pacific time on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll see you there. Peace and power.
Electric Acid. Electric Acid.
Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonize your mind, body, and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.